Attention listeners, AfterSight's annual hike is coming up on July 27th.
It was a really good experience for me.
Visit aftersight.org/hike and become an audio trekker today.
That hike today gave me so much courage.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the April 21st, 2024 Sunday's reading of the Loveland Reporter Herald. My name is Shawnine Shanahan. Today we'll be reading the following main articles. Assault Weapons Ban Faces Likely Key Vote by Nick Coltrane and Seth Kleman. Blood Drive being held in honor of Juno Smith by Austin Flasks, and following up with miscellaneous articles. State Legislature. Assault weapons ban faces likely key vote. Senator Tom Sullivan, vocal gun violence prevention advocate, but longtime ban skeptic, is on the committee. By Nick Coltrane and Seth Kleman. The proposed ban on the sale, transfer, and manufacturing of many high-powered semi-automatic guns in Colorado will face an uphill fight in the state Senate after clearing the House for the first time. The measure, House Bill 1292, would ban guns referred to as assault weapons by its Democratic sponsors. It now heads to a Senate committee that includes one of the most vocal gun violence prevention advocates in the state, who happens to be a longtime skeptic of the effectiveness of blanket prohibitions like the one proposed. Senator Tom Sullivan is also the father of a victim of one of the state's most high-profile mass shootings, and the committee's tight partisan makeup looks likely to position him as the key vote. The bill, titled Prohibit Certain Weapons Used in Mass Shootings, would define assault weapons as certain semi-automatic rifles and firearms based on whether and where they take detachable magazines and have other characteristics such as offhand grips or collapsible stocks. It would not ban the possession of the weapons, meaning firearms covered under the bill but already owned would remain legal to keep. The bill would also prohibit the possession of rapid-fire trigger activators. In a historic first for the policy, the bill passed the full House on Sunday. On Thursday, it was assigned to the Senate's State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, which will vote by early May on whether to send the measure to the full Senate. Democrats hold a 3-2 advantage on the committee. Two of its Democratic members, Senators James Coleman and Chris Hansen, both of Denver, expressed general support for the concept Thursday morning, though they added they hadn't yet read the bill in detail. The third Democrat and possible deciding vote, given universal Republican opposition, is Sullivan, who lives in Centennial. He's been a proponent of firearm regulation since his son Alex was murdered in the Aurora movie theater shooting in 2012, and he's backed several gun regulation bills in the past year alone. But he consistently has stopped short of supporting a ban on so-called assault weapons. He worries the policy would spur a rush to buy the newly banned firearms, inadvertently increasing the number in circulation while not addressing the leading causes of gun violence. Other policies, he has argued, would do more to stem the tide. Sullivan did not commit to a firm yes or no on Thursday. He reiterated his past skepticism and said he would be, quote, crystal clear with everybody where I am when the committee voted. Quote, if I had thought an assault weapons ban was the way to go, I would have done it the day after Alex was murdered with one, Sullivan said. Coleman, who chairs the committee, said he was leaning towards supporting the bill because, quote, I don't understand why folks need, unquote, the weapons. But he said he's also keeping Sullivan's perspective in mind. Quote, if the desired outcome is to save lives and keep people from getting access to the stuff that can cause more harm, then we should be talking about modifications to firearms, and we should be talking about much more than just one particular type, Coleman said. Senator Julie Gonzalez, a Denver Democrat who's the prime sponsor of the bill in the Senate, said she was in active conversation with Sullivan, but she wouldn't say how she thought his skepticism could be overcome. Quote, it's a hard thing to do, but when he's also seen firsthand the devastation that those weapons of war have on families and communities, she said, of Sullivan's position as a potential make-or-break vote on the bill. Gonzalez said that she's still working on gauging broader support among Senate Democrats. Quote, "This is a gut check issue for members of the Senate caucus," she said. "At the end of the day, no matter what happens on this bill, I think that our voters across the state are incredibly clear about their position on the issue, and I look forward to the next step of this process, which is the Senate committee hearing." Representative Tim Hernandez, a Denver Democrat and one of the bill's prime sponsors in the House, echoed that sentiment. Sullivan's longstanding skepticism of the policy is not new, and Hernandez met with Sullivan before the bill was introduced earlier this session. Quote, "I also know that as long as our colleagues follow through on how voters are saying they want us to handle issues," Hernandez said, "I have no doubts that we'll arrive at the right place and land on a bill on the governor's desk." Governor Jared Polis, also a Democrat, has also not embraced a ban on high-powered guns. He supported a federal ban during his time in Congress, and Polis spokeswoman Shelby Wyman said in a statement in recent days that federal action was needed to prevent gun violence. Wyman wrote that though Polis is skeptical of the state ban, quote, "he will continue to monitor it as it moves through the legislative process." She did not directly respond when asked if Polis opposed the bill or would veto it should it reach his desk. Senate President Steve Fenberg, a Boulder Democrat, said he didn't know the extent of support for the bill among Senate Democrats, though he was aware of, quote, several no votes. Should the bill pass its first Senate committee, it would need the support from 18 of the chamber's 23 Democrats to achieve a majority, given universal opposition from the chamber's Republicans. Fenberg indicated that he wouldn't be willing to tweak a committee's roster to ensure the bill made it to the Senate floor. Swapping members to ensure a bill's survival or failure is uncommon, he said, and would happen only if a bill had enough support to fully pass the chamber. Quote, "we just got the bill," he said Tuesday, 2 days after it passed the House. "Honestly, I know the press and the House and the Twitter has been talking about this bill ad nauseum since session started, but it hasn't been much of a conversation in the Senate. I don't think we have a great sense of exactly where people are. It just hasn't been top of mind in the Senate like it was in the House." Senator Mark Baisley, a Woodland Park Republican on the committee that will first hear the bill, said he would oppose the measure firmly, both on the committee and on the Senate floor, should it make it that far. Quote, "it's obvious that the Democrat side of the aisle is far more in favor of gun control than the Republican side of the aisle," Baisley said. But he said he was hopeful that, quote, "enough of the Democrats would join us in seeing reason in adhering to their oath of office to uphold the constitutional rights that we all hold and vote down that nasty bill." The bill is one of several firearm regulations being considered in the legislature this year, though it's the only one targeting a specific type of firearm. Other legislation includes bills banning firearms even with a concealed carry permit at polling places, schools, and government buildings, though local governments could opt out, requiring specific merchant codes for firearm and accessory sales, establishing state permits for gun dealers, setting insurance requirements for gun owners, and increasing training requirements to obtain concealed carry permits. Fort Collins, blood drive being held in honor of Juno Smith by Austin Flasks. When Laura Christian's daughter, Juno Smith, was diagnosed with leukemia in 2019 at the age of 8, her mind was filled with questions, not only on why this happened to her child, named after a Roman goddess, but how she could help. She looked to questions of religion and faith, to superstition and to karma, but eventually for her daughter who loves antique dolls and dyeing her hair fun colors, she looked to giving Smith's name to help others. Quote, "although I've now come to accept that I can't tip the scales in Juno's favor with the blood of others, I still think this was one of the better things to come out of this journey," Christian wrote in a blog post last year about her experience through Smith's diagnosis and treatment. Quote, "I'm planning our next annual blood drive as I write this and hope to stay involved with blood donation forever." This is something she will be doing once again Friday in honor of Smith for the fourth time. Christian is encouraging people to push past any fear of needles or blood bags to help save people's lives with just a few minutes of time. Quote, "that is so huge," she told the reporter Herald. Christian said, in November of 2019, her daughter was 8 years old and feeling a little sick. While doctors told her it was likely a regular sickness, it didn't seem to go away, and she started to notice Smith's symptoms more and more. This included when the two were lying side by side taking a nap one day. Quote, I could just see her heart fluttering in her neck, she said. I was like, this does not feel okay. She said when she took Smith to her ex-husband's house on her way to Denver International Airport to fly out of state for a business trip, she urged him to take the young girl back to the hospital. When she landed, Christian sent Smith's father a text asking how she was. He called her in a panic, telling her their daughter was in an ambulance on the way to the hospital. Christian immediately got on another flight back to Colorado, rushing to see her daughter in the early morning hours. When she got there, she thought her daughter was getting fluids by IV. Smith, in fact, was getting her first of many blood transfusions. Quote, I had no idea what was going on. I was just watching My Little Pony, Smith interjected nonchalantly into the story. This began a years-long journey of treatment and hospital stays. Christian said they eventually learned that not only did Smith have leukemia, but a rarer form of the cancer known as Philadelphia chromosome-positive leukemia. She said while Smith spent her first few months in inpatient treatment, then at Brent's place before eventually being discharged, they frequently found themselves back in the hospital. Quote, it was a lot of bouncing in and out, back and forth, Christian said. We would think, okay, we are finally going home, and then 5 days later we'd be back in the hospital. Quote, it was really tough to see someone I was really close to go through with it, especially with the kids of that age, said Colton Phillips, sales manager at Christian's business, All Star Cleaning Services. Smith's treatment included countless blood and platelet transfusions and even painful reactions to medication, like when a mix of medications caused partial paralysis of Smith's legs, leading to her to be wheelchair-bound for 2 years, Christian said. Much of her treatment also came as the COVID-19 pandemic hit the world, throwing so much of normal life off kilter and creating a scary environment for Christian and her daughter in the hospital. Quote, it was really hard and chaotic, Christian said. Through this, she was not alone, though, surrounded by her family and a team of medical personnel who supported Smith through it. The help she got even inspired Smith's future career plans, instilling in her a desire to be an oncology nurse when she grows up. Smith said she remembers these things, the care from others and the pain she endured, but she didn't have too much to say about it. Quote, yeah, she said casually when asked, I'm used to it at this point. Amy Dixon, a Fort Collins resident who recently started working with Christian, said she met her shortly after Smith got sick through a Facebook group for local moms of children with cancer, saying she and Christian were, quote, both fighting for her children at the same time. When thinking of Christian and Smith, Dixon initially said they were incredible, but quickly amended herself. Quote, incredible isn't a good enough word to describe them, she said. They are unbreakable. They can climb any mountain. They are both just incredibly strong people. Christian said that before her daughter was diagnosed with leukemia, she had no idea the impact blood transfusions and donated blood had on cancer patients. Quote, up until that point, I didn't have a good concept of blood donation or blood transfusion, she said. I thought of it in terms of gunshot wounds and car accidents and things like that. I didn't realize blood products were so critical to keeping cancer patients alive long enough for the chemo to work. It was out of this realization and her initial hope to put some good karma into the world to maybe help Smith that she started her first blood drive. For her first drive in 2021, she aimed high and hoped to bring in 10% of her client base of more than 700, a goal she met with around 70 people coming in to donate. In 2022 and 2023, she continued to hold drives, though she did not see as many people, but that hasn't stopped Christian and her team at All Star Cleaning Services from bringing the drive back again. Christian said this year they have around 50 open slots on blood donation buses for people from noon to 7 p.m. April 26th at All Stars headquarters, 120 West Saturn Drive, Suite B in Fort Collins. Christian encouraged members of the community to register for a spot online through UC Health's donate portal or walk in to see if any spots are available. She also said interested donors can be tested to see if they could donate bone marrow, another important aspect in treating cancer patients like Smith. Beyond even this donation event, Christian and her team expressed their feelings on the importance of donating blood to helping those going through cancer treatments. Dixon, who saw her own son Ben go through chemotherapy, encouraged people to think about what children with cancer go through when they question if they should give. Quote, if these kids can go through chemotherapy and radiation and deal with all of the awful treatments they have to go through, then 10 minutes of giving blood is nothing, she said. It is so important we fill these buses. Quote, one donation, one little prick, one uncomfortable moment can save three human lives, Phillips said. Can give a child back to their parents, can give a parent back to their child. For Christian and Smith, those offering to donate their blood mean a great deal. Quote, it means everything to me, Christian said. Nobody really understands the journey of what it is like as a child or a parent if they haven't experienced it. It is just very isolating and shows the support like this are so important for us, for morale, and for other kids who are fighting cancer, too. Quote, it would mean a lot, Smith said. These people really need the blood. They really need this blood to live and be able to get the chemo. It is very important for people to donate blood for the cancer patients. While Smith made strides in her treatment, going from 98% leukemia cells in her bone marrow at diagnosis to just under 5% after treatment, the family recently was struck with the news they never hoped to hear. Christian said during a check-in with doctors, she requested that some extra tests be done to see if Smith had relapsed. Around 3 weeks ago, Christian received a call informing her Smith had entered molecular relapse. Christian said this means mutation in her cells has been found once again, a sign that typically precedes the cancer returning. Christian said, though, that the path forward is a bit hazy. Since Smith's form of leukemia is rare even among adults, there is no real protocol for how to go forward. She anticipates oral chemotherapy will come soon, as well as potentially stem cell treatments. She said for now the news has been sort of surreal. Quote, it is weird to be talking about something like that when she still feels good, she said. The darkness and hardships have not taken Smith's positive spirit, though. Eager during the long interview to get up, pet her cat Ginger, middle name Snap, and talk about her hair, modeled after one of her favorite singers, Melanie Martinez. Nothing gets a smile on her face like her collection of vintage and antique dolls. Quote, they're so interesting and adorable, she said. I always loved creepy things. And in describing her daughter, Christian chose three words, sassy, fun, and fierce. Smith, as inquisitive as ever, quickly questioned her mom on what that last word meant. Quote, it means you're just a warrior, darling, Christian responded. Obituaries. Patricia Marlatt, 90, passed peacefully into the arms of her savior on April 7, 2024. A memorial celebration of Pat's life will be held on May 21, 2024 at 11 a.m. at Faith Church in Loveland. Service details and Pat's obituary can be found at www.resthavencolorado.com. Jeffrey Reitz of Loveland, Celebration of Life in Nebraska on May 4, 2024. Tourist attraction. Aerial tramway will return in summer 2024, one of only a handful of free-span tramways in the U.S. The whirring sound of motors and cables will once again return to Prospect Mountain in Estes Park. The Estes Park Aerial Tramway, the nearly 70-year-old historic tramway that closed in 2023, has been purchased by Gondola Ventures LLC, GVC, and will open for the 2024 season on May 25th. Quote, GVC is excited to add the Estes Park Aerial Tramway to its portfolio, and we're honored the Heron family agreed to let us take on the tramway's historic legacy, said Perry Shea, CEO and co-founder of Gondola Ventures. Quote, we are passionate about building and operating aerial ropeway tourism businesses, and the Estes Park Tramway is one of the best examples of an iconic system in the U.S. The tramway was a one-of-a-kind engineering marvel when it was built in 1955, providing rides for the first passengers on August 3rd that summer. Designed and built by engineering pioneer Robert Heron, who owned Heron Engineering in Denver, it is still one of only a handful of free-span tramways in the U.S. A free-span tram does not require any towers to support the wire ropes between the bottom and top stations, providing a smoother ride, spanning longer distances, and moving at a faster pace than more traditional gondolas. Heron became fascinated with tramways while working for the 10th Mountain Division in Italy and Germany during World War II. He brought his interest and knowledge back to Colorado, where he not only built the Estes Park Aerial Tramway and managed it until his death in 1999, but also built other tramways for the ski industry. His work includes building the first double chairlift in the world at Berthoud Pass, the number one chairlift at Aspen Mountain, plus other projects at Royal Gorge, Sugar Bowl, and Heavenly Valley. Heron's design follows a more traditional European form of trams, where a bilateral tramway with two master cables keeps a uniform tension, but with the elaborate counterweight system. That is a complicated way of saying the tram works with two cables that carry cars back and forth, stopping at each station to allow riders to get on and off. Lacking support poles on the entire length of the wires, the Estes Park aerial tramway reaches elevations as high as 200 feet in the air. This Estes Park structure offers a unique experience to view the enormity of the Estes Valley from a comfortable ride as it ascends 1,060 feet up Prospect Mountain. As a tramway brochure from the early days of the ride stated, quote, "The higher you go, the better the show." After Heron's passing in 1999, his son John stepped in to run the business. After he passed in 2022, the Heron family felt they had no longer had the expertise to operate the business and put it on the market. It sat closed during the summer of 2023 as a potential buyer was sought. That day came when Shea, a tram enthusiast and engineer, learned about the sale in late 2023. Quote, "I love what Bob Heron did for the tram history and the industry," said Shea in a recent interview with the Trail Gazette. Quote, "There are so many great stories about him, and we can help bring that back." GVC plans to maintain the history and keep the brand alive while giving a facelift to the buildings, adding accessible entry ramps, repainting the parking lot, and installing a new reservation system to help reduce wait times. Quote, "We're excited to breathe new life into the Estes Park aerial tramway, ensuring it remains a cherished destination for years to come," said Adrian Liddell, longtime general manager of the Estes Park tramway. Quote, "Our goal is to blend the tramway's storied past with modern enhancements that will elevate the guest experience." What will be preserved is the 5-minute ride up 1,400 feet along the steep northern face of Prospect Mountain, culminating with the jaw-dropping views of Estes Valley below and the mountain peaks in all directions. Quote, "Our whole team at Visit Estes Park is thrilled about the reopening of the aerial tramway," said Rebecca Domenico Gelsinger, Chief Operating Officer at Visit Estes Park. Quote, "It's such an iconic Estes Park attraction, and the new ownership will bring a fresh perspective to the Heron family's legacy. I believe that the aerial tramway will continue to be a major highlight in our town, attracting guests from near and far to see the natural beauty of our destination." The relaunched Estes Tramway will offer a historic ride with spectacular views from the tram and the viewing platform at the top of the mountain, along with delicious food from the Summit Cafe and opportunities to purchase unique merchandise. Quote, "The Estes Chamber of Commerce is excited to welcome Gondola Ventures to Estes Park, and we are grateful that the Estes Park tram will continue operating," said Colleen DePascal, president of the Estes Chamber of Commerce. Quote, "Both our residents and visitors agree that the tram is a landmark for our town, and we look forward to enjoying the views from the top." Gondola Ventures is the leading private equity firm specializing in aerial ropeway tourism projects focused on financing, building, and operating point of interest gondola systems and their related ancillary tourism businesses. Their portfolio of projects includes the Estes Park aerial tramway, the Mighty Argo cable car project in Idaho Springs, and a dozen additional systems under agreement or in development globally. The Estes Park aerial tramway will reopen at 9 a.m. Saturday, May 25th. The tramway will be open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. throughout the summer. For more information about the Estes Park aerial tramway, visit estestram.com. In brief, state unemployment rate rose in March as national rate fell. Colorado's adjusted unemployment rate increased 0.2 percentage points in March to 3.7%, according to data released Friday by the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment. While still lower than the national jobless rate of 3.8% for the month, Colorado's figure is moving in the opposite direction. The national unemployment rate decreased 0.1 percentage points from February to March. In the Boulder Valley in northern Colorado, Boulder and Larimer counties posted an unemployment rate of 3.5% last month. Broomfield County's rate was 3.7% and Weld County's was 4.1%. Quote, "Over the year, the average work week for all Colorado employees on private non-farm payrolls decreased from 33.1 to 32.7 hours, while average hourly earnings grew from $35.14 to $37.77, over $3 more than the national average hourly earnings of $34.69, according to a CDLE report. Thank you for joining us for the Loveland Reporter Herald. My name is Shaunine Shanahan.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303 303- 786-7777.